A flash of light beams over a planet's horizon before pulling back quickly into the vast galaxy. A bright sun shines through misty white clouds that dissipate, leaving the word Lionsgate with the light shining behind it. A Spartan helmet logo appears. New Sparta Films. Out of a bright light, the logo for Number 9 Films. Shining white letters on a black background. Lip Sync. New Sparta Films presents, in association with Hanway Films, Lip Sync and Day Tripper Films, a Stephen Woolley, Elizabeth Carlson, Number 9 Films production. A film by Juan Carlos Medina. Curtains open at the theatre, and a suited man steps onto a small dark stage. He holds up his hands in the light.
Let us begin, my friends, at the end.
Daytime. Inside a dark brick house, a well-dressed woman walks through a green-panelled room and knocks on a door before opening it. She stops and looks down at a man lying in a bed.
John? John?
The woman stares at him, and a maid walks in behind her. John lies dead with his eyes open. The maid runs off. The police look around the house. The woman crouches in front of the fireplace, staring at burnt papers. She stands and walks towards a police officer, who puts his notebook away.
You left nothing. No note. If he meant to poison himself, why would he not at least leave a note?
I fear that the act of burning his papers bears testament enough to his state of mind. Mrs. Cree, forgive me. I know this is neither the time nor the place, but may I say what an ardent admirer I am of your work?
I looked in the kitchen, sir. This was all I could find.
A bottle.
I'm afraid this will be it. There was residue in a glass on the nightstand.
Oh, it can't have been in there, sir. His nightly cordial was always prepared by Mrs. Cree.
Evelyn?
You did not make the drink?
Surely you're not asking me in earnest if I poisoned my husband.
Oh, sir, believe me, she cannot have done this. The two of them were in a most violent dispute yesterday. Why would you prepare Mr. Cree a nightcap when they were not on speaking terms?
Evelyn, what has possessed you? Sir, please, allow me to explain.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Gray. You'll need to do that down at Scotland Yard.
The woman looks horrified. In the theatre...
A woman accused of poisoning her husband. But not just any woman. Little Lizzie, darling of the music halls. But the city was enthralled with the fearsome Limehouse Golem. Who was he? Who would be his next victim? The Golem had last struck the day before her arrest, and his was the name on every Londoner's lips.
Set against a moving kaleidoscope of colours, the Limehouse Golem. Limehouse, London, 1880.
How many are dead?
Five. Shopkeeper Mr. Gerard, his wife Mary, their maid, and the two Gerard children.
It's not number 29. 29 Ratcliffe Highway.
What of it?
The Ratcliffe Highway murders. John Williams.
It's a bit before my time.
And mine. It was 70 years ago.
Can you confirm it?
This is the work of the Golem.
What is it about this house?
Do you think it could be cursed, sir?
Gentlemen, please.
I'd ask you to direct your request to my colleague, Detective Inspector Kildare. He's taking over the case.
Kildare, how are you spelling that?
Taking over.
I'm just stepping aside, not stepping down. The public seeks reassurance, Kildare. What better way than to give them new blood?
Are you fearful to step into the city?
You confirm that this is the work of the day.
How many more people have to die before the golem is caught?
The coach drives on, leaving Kildare with the press.
Inspector Kildare, is it true that this is your first murder case?
Inside.
Move back.
Do you not have to be displaying the bodies today, sir?
Step aside, sir. The mate was found over there.
Were there footprints when you arrived, the golem's prints?
Half of Limehouse was already here.
Which of the victims was found there?
None. The golem moved that one himself. Either Mr. or Mrs. Gerard.
More likely him. If the maid was killed first, he'd investigate the disturbance. Where's her body now?
We took her upstairs, sir.
At least up there we can keep the point out.
Down here it's a lost cause.
They can't all be reporters.
Oh, no. Locals looking for entertainment. Cheaper than a ticket to a shocker. Sometimes I suspect if I was dispatched to hell, I'd barely notice a change. Bar the weather. This is Inspector Kildare, taking over from Roberts.
Sir.
Can you tell this idiot to let me out? I'm with the Evening Post.
Kildare and the officer, Flood, slowly climb the narrow staircase and reach a covered body on the landing, slumped against the wall.
This is the maid.
Kildare reaches down to pull the sheet back and they both quickly look away.
I'm sorry. I've never seen anything of this kind.
Neither have I.
He covers the head again. A child's toy lies scattered on the dark wooden floor alongside a small shoe. Kildare looks into the room and at a metal-framed double bed where two bloody, clothed corpses lie side by side. Flood follows him into the room and they both look down at the badly mutilated faces and the blood-soaked bed. Kildare turns and reads some writing scrawled on the wall in a foreign language. Flood walks over to stand beside him.
He who observes spills no less blood than he who inflicts the blow. Lactantius.
Impressive, sir.
The truth has a habit of sticking in the mind.
Truth.
Those who fail to prevent injustice are as guilty as the perpetrator. It's a message. To us.
Flood goes upstairs inside a large old police building.
Evidence. John Cree case. The poisoning.
You've had quite a week. First the Limehouse golem, now this.
The sergeant hands him a sheet of paper.
I heard Inspector Kildare was asking after you.
Yes. I don't know what he wanted. I keep missing him.
Well, they did right, giving him the golem case, I reckon. He'd have risen well above Roberts by now if those rumours hadn't done for him. You know, that he wasn't the marrying kind. Men? Well, before your time, I suppose.
Kildare's looking at photographs on a board in a large office when Flood knocks.
Come in. I got your message, sir.
I'm being assigned a constable. I thought someone with your knowledge of Limehouse might be an asset. When I heard nothing back, I thought perhaps the offer didn't appeal.
I came by twice, sir. You were out.
I was at Limehouse, appealing for witnesses, to no avail.
Flood walks over to the board.
What are you looking for?
I'm just looking, trying to understand.
And the golem's a madman. What else is there to be understood?
Even madness has its own logic. Here there's none. At Ratcliffe Highway, he slaughtered a household. The previous week, a prostitute, Alice Stanton. Before that, Solomon Vile. He was an old man, a scholar.
Oh, my God. If that is...
Yes. Laid upon the open pages of a book on Jewish folklore, like a bookmark.
The legend of the golem. Is that how the press got the name?
Our murderer obviously approved.
And who were the first to?
of women of the street. I do remember reading of that one. Old Salty.
Her name was Jane Quigg. The point is, there's no story to any of them. Men, women, young, old, Jew and Christian, rich and poor.
Perhaps he just likes to kill.
No. I'll wager there's a tale being told, if we can sink to his circle of damnation to comprehend it.
If I may say, sir, seems you've been wasted down in theft and fraud.
Oh, I'll be back there soon enough. The golem strikes again, that seems to be the plan.
What do you mean?
The Yard is setting me up as a scapegoat. They'll not risk Roberts, will they? I'm expendable. They get to preserve the reputation of their golden boy and the public. Get blood.
Well, as I said back in Limehouse, seems they never have their fill of that.
He who spectates.
He doesn't mean us, he means the public.
The public want blood, the golem provides it.
Yes. I'm sure that must be it, sir.
Are you? I'm not. Do you feel like a walk? To the library?
Flood follows Kildare out. Inside the British Museum.
Ah, that quotation about the gladiatorial ring. The guilt of the audience who seek bloodshed. Well, perhaps you read it elsewhere. It's quoted in an old piece by the essayist Thomas De Quincey, one I imagine might interest a man in your line of work.
What's the piece?
On murder considered as one of the fine arts, a satire about the Ratcliffe Highway killings of 1811.
Should we talk with Mr. Quincey? He has been dead for 20 years, Flood, so it might be a bit.
Kildare looks through De Quincey's book and turns to a page covered in scribbled notes.
What is it?
The notes are written all around the text.
To kill.
Kildare turns the page and finds more notes framing the text. At the bottom of one, my golem, then the word golem, repeated throughout the black written text. Two dates are written, September 9th and 23rd, 1880. Kildare takes the book to the librarian.
Who last borrowed this book?
This is a reading room, Inspector, not a local library.
So nothing leaves the premises? Do you keep an attendance record?
Of course, but there's no earthly way of knowing what anyone read or when they read it.
Who was here on September the 24th?
He checks a ledger.
There were four men in the reading room that day. Why?
It's the final entry in a diary someone has kept in the pages of this book. Were you here yourself?
I'm here every day.
Then I must ask you for a sample of your handwriting. I'll need the same from all the staff. And those four names, please.
The Dan Leno.
And the Karl Marx and George Gissing. If you're a follower of philosophy and literature.
What do you know of John Cree?
Sir, if he's the same John Cree I'm thinking of, I believe he's dead.
Flood gets out of a carriage.
Place the diary in my files. Keep it safe. Find out all you can about George Gissing, Karl Marx and Dan Leno.
Where are you going?
To investigate the dead man. If he was the golem, London's troubles are over.
Flood looks worried.
And you describe your husband as being in a state of despair.
In the weeks leading to his death, yes?
My husband has spent several years writing a play, Your Honour, entitled Misery Junction. It was not a success. I believe he never recovered from that.
And yet, he continued to pass each day in the reading room at the British Museum, reading and writing.
A change in mood and a change in habit are two different things.
On the day of his death, the librarian described your husband as being in good spirits.
My husband was adept at presenting a false face to the world, sir.
And that is something you would understand, is it not, Mrs. Cree? Playing a role.
I used to be a music hall performer, if that's what you mean.
And what of the role you play today before this court? That of a respectable, educated lady. You were born out of wedlock, were you not?
Yes, sir.
As a child, you stitched sailcloth and passed much time with men.
I can assure you I was a God-fearing child, an innocent,
I was tasked by my mother to deliver our sails to the docks. Encountering men was not something I could hope to avoid.
Here you go. Good as new.
Carry that all the way.
Look at your poor hands, Lizzie.
My master's made for the blood toss of these hands.
Don't you dare run off and join the theatre. These sails ain't going to mend themselves.
I like the comics. Charlie's going to take me to see Dan Leno one day. Aren't you, Charlie? When I'm older. The guards and the porters came round her by the score and she told them all she'd never had a ticket punch before.
Dan Leno was never that blue. Did Charlie teach you that?
Just don't let your ma hear it, she'll kill you.
What's it mean?
If you want, I'll show you.
Me mum will be wanting me home, if you'll give me our pay.
Money's in my hut.
Charlie leads her away. Later, Lizzie walks slowly and painfully down a dark hallway.
What took you so long?
She goes into a small, run-down room at the end, where a woman's bent over a spinning wheel.
Has a man laid hands on you? You liar.
I fell.
Come here. What did I do wrong?
Mother, no, please.
Did I not teach you well enough?
No, I beg you.
Come here.
The mum walks towards her with a glowing hot metal rod.
You want me to go to heaven, don't you?
That place will keep you from heaven, Lizzie.
Lizzie closes her eyes and drops a coin on the floor.
That is enough, Mrs. Cree.
Kildare listens in court.
Lunch.
Flood walks up to the white-haired sergeant at the desk in the evidence room.
Anyone come by from the Era newspaper? I'm expecting a package.
No package. Just this.
He hands Flood a letter with a photograph of a man.
John Cree. No luck getting a sample of Cree's handwriting from his old employers, I'm afraid, sir. They don't keep reporters' submissions. Had a more recent portrait, though, and I've asked archives for all the files on Gissing and Marks.
Very good. See if they have anything on Lena.
Kildare adds John Cree's photo to a line of photographs lying flat on his desk. Flood glances back at him as he leaves. Kildare opens De Quincey's book on one of the pages covered in notes. John reads with him.
September the 5th, 1880.
It was a fine, bright evening, and I could feel a murder coming on. Since it was to be my first show, I decided, by way of inspiration, to pay a visit to the site of the immortal Ratcliffe Highway murders. More than half a century ago, on this sacred spot, an entire family was dispatched into eternity by a man named John Williams. A man Thomas De Quincey describes as an artist of exquisite skill. And yet now the sight of his greatest work was defiled by a seller of second-hand clothes.
We're closed, I'm afraid, sir.
I'm sorry. The door was open. No matter. I'll be sure to return.
But I was a beginner, an understudy, not yet ready for the great stage.
A young woman standing in the doorway smiles alluringly at John and steps out into the light. In a room, he pushes her back onto a bed.
An artist must perfect his craft. And tonight I would start with a small, private rehearsal.
Gin?
Don't you think you've had enough? I want you awake, else you'll miss all the fun.
John takes off his cape and stands over her. The young woman lies back and pulls up her skirt. John crawls up the bed and plunges a long-bladed knife into her. He pulls the blade out and plunges again.
I felt that she suspected my game from the start and offered herself willingly, warm in the knowledge that the world would soon be forced to confront the plight of her kind.
John keeps stabbing and looks up, wiping the blood from his cheek.
I took out her eyes in case my image had been imprinted upon them, and washed the blood from my hands with the gin in her chamber pot. My first performance was complete.
The woman lies soaked in blood with her eyes cut out. Kildare sits quietly at his desk. Lizzie Cree standing in her cell. She looks round, clean and elegantly dressed, as the gate opens and Kildare approaches.
Mrs. Cree, I'm Inspector Kildare of Scotland Yard.
Suppose you're here to chastise me for my candour in court?
On the contrary, I applaud you for it. It's all too easy to imagine that those who have enjoyed success have never known suffering.
Well, to quote the great Dan Leno, here we are again.
I'm afraid I'm not a frequenter of the musicals.
He portrays the suffering of women. My gender becomes inured to injustice. We expect it until we can greet it merely with a shrug.
Oh, I understood he was a comic.
The line between comedy and tragedy is a fine one. You haven't told me why you're here.
Kildare steps closer.
I wish to put it to you that I know why you might have had good reason to poison your husband.
Please, sir, I am hoarse from repetition. There will be no confession. My plea has been made.
Mrs. Cree, I'm not assigned to your case. I'm here because your husband is a suspect in another matter.
What matter?
A journal has been found. I'd like to compare the handwriting with his. Might you have anything that he wrote?
His papers?
He burnt them, yes. Mrs. Cree, if your husband were found to have committed murder, your claims of suicide gain weight. Do you understand? You could go free.
Matter?
I'm investigating a series of deaths. They're calling them the Limehouse Golem
murders. I can't honestly think my husband capable of such things.
It's not my place to have an opinion. I just follow the threads.
The newspaper said it was your first murder case. There's a rotten kind of chance to be given.
Excuse me?
I wanted to be a serious actress, you know. I had my chance once too. They don't give you another.
That's why I'd like to help you.
You needn't feign interest in me.
There's nothing feigned about it. Raised in cruelty and yet you've stood tall and thrived. That's uncommon.
Lizzie looks away sadly.
My mother did me the great service of dying young.
She steps away.
I was raised in the music halls.
Lizzie sits by her mother's bedside and watches her die. She rests her head on her mother's stomach. From above, the mother lies still with her hands folded together, her eyes open and staring upwards, her skin smeared with dirt. Lizzie gets up and walks away from the bed, looking shaken and scared. She walks along a path by the river, with sailing ships moored nearby. Then she walks through the busy streets. Men smile and leer at her as she passes them in a narrow passage. Lizzie comes out in a narrow cobbled street where a man advertises Dan Leno and chorus girls in pink stand outside the Palace Music Hall. Lizzie looks up at the lights, then at a coin in her hand, and pays to go in.
It's halfway over, love. Come back tomorrow.
All right, go on in.
You can still catch Leno if you're quick.
God bless.
Lizzie hurries inside. In stark contrast to the street, the music hall is warm and friendly, with lights illuminating the furnishings and people sitting at tables. Lizzie pushes through the crowd and stops to stare at a female acrobat, Aveline, spinning on a sash in the middle of the room. Lizzie grins and sits down as she applauds. Aveline finishes her routine and smiles.
Hold up, here we go. Oh, what fine manners. Such fine manners.
I feel as if I'm at a tea party.
Please note,
the oxtail and the jelly tonight is 3p. Now, without any further ado, may I introduce the man of the hour, Mr. Dan Leno!
A man dressed as a haggard, aristocratic woman pushes a pram out.
Here we are again!
Lizzie sits down and watches keenly.
Both my hands while I'm trying to cook my old man's mutton broth. My fat, boss-eyed baby was crying. I believe she's a little bit off. The meat all got burnt to a cinder, which made my old man very wild. Then he threw the whole lot through the window and smashed me on the nose with the child!
Dan stalks across the stage.
And the child began screaming as it never screamed before, while my nose with claret was streaming. He tried to dislocate my jaw. He kicked me and punched me this morning. My poor face such a fright. He blacked both my eyes in a warning. But I'm waiting for him tonight. He hit me and punched me this morning. And my poor face such a fright.
Lizzie grins and claps along.
But I'm waiting for him tonight.
Dan holds a knife in one hand and an iron in the other. Lizzie watches wide-eyed as he takes his bow. Afterwards, she waits in the street outside the stage door.
Pies, all in dire need of pies. I tell you what, dearie, seeing as you're here again, be a good girl, give Uncle Ant. Be careful now, they're all too good to drop, as the pregnant woman said to the midwife.
I've seen it before.
Yeah, Vic, a little bit of what you fancy. John.
Backstage.
Have a line, dear. Nice and hot, just as you like it. Only not quite so big.
Thanks, Uncle.
Lizzie follows Uncle through the busy communal area to another dressing area, where Dan sits alone out of costume. She holds a pie out to him.
Last one's for you. Mr. Leno.
Mr. Leno, is it? Did you find her the grossest? Uncle, she's certainly a green one.
Now, girls. What's your name?
Lizzie, sir. Lambeth Marsh Lizzie.
I thought I could smell marsh gas.
Oh, don't let him damn you, it's just that way. And call me Dan. This is Tommy Farr, theatre manager and keeper of the Bunts. Speaking of which, we owe you something for your trouble.
Tommy pays Lizzie, and Dan looks at her hand.
What in God's name have they had you doing down there in those marshes?
Digging graves. 5 years it was before I found out you were supposed to use a shovel.
I like this one. Can you read?
Like a native?
Yeah.
He hands her the small hardback book he was reading.
What's fame? A fancied life in others' breath. Thing beyond us, even before our death. All we feel of it begins and ends in the small circle of our foes and friends.
That's my favourite line. Alexander Pope. Are you looking for work, Lizzie?
Yeah.
Only our prompter ran off with a lion comique. And it won't all be lavender. There'll be some fetch and carry, but there's decent bunts and room in the digs with the dancers. What do you say?
How would you describe your relationship with Dan Leno?
We were friends, sir. And he was my mentor. He took me under his wing.
No, Mrs. Kinney.
In the empty music hall.
Where did you learn to read and write if you didn't go to school?
My mother's Bible, I suppose. Oh, and speaking of books. Oi, thank you.
Finished already? God, that's the second this week.
I think books might be my first love. And I've always had it said that first love is insatiable.
Sod writing new gags. They can have the milkmaid again tonight and like it.
I want to show you something.
Where are we going?
You'll see.
In the British Museum's library.
Whole room. Full of books.
Every inch of it.
People come here just to read.
To read, to learn, to create. Now, it's like a great furnace. I mean, the future is being forged here. Writers, philosophers, men of science, all the way down to lowly clowns like me.
The ladies' table is upstairs.
Oh, thanking you kindly, oh good sir.
You were never more than friends?
No, sir. I believe he felt protective of me.
The prosecution wishes to remind the court that Mr. Leno was recently questioned in connection with the Limehouse Golem murders.
Objection, Your Honor!
I merely wish
At the police station. Kildare pushes his way through the men on the stairs. At the top, he hurries over to meet Roberts.
Why was I not aware that Dan Lena was previously a suspect?
You told me, Kildare. It was in every daily newspaper.
But not in the brief you gave me.
Well, he was eliminated from inquiries. The reports on my desk somewhere.
You didn't think to place it in your files.
The streets of London run red with blood. And you concern yourself with paperwork. You'd have been a fine politician, Kildare. Were you not the topic of such speculation?
Roberts walks off. Flood holds a report of Lizzie's trial.
I wouldn't read that.
Disgraceful lies, all of it. The poor woman spoke of misfortune and cruelty, and they've turned it upon her. Makes my blood boil.
Seems your beloved Leno wasn't actually a suspect.
My beloved? What man doesn't enjoy Dan Leno?
One who doesn't care for the music halls?
Well, I venture to say you've not seen the right show, sir. If you have a wish for a recommendation?
He was questioned in regard to Alice Stanton's gown. A label sewn into it identified it as his, a stage costume.
So he knew her?
Leno stated that the dress was part of a consignment of stage costumes he'd sold a year earlier to a purveyor of second-hand clothes, and apparently he provided a receipt which proved
it. Then it was merely a coincidence.
Perhaps. As is perhaps the fact that the purveyor of second-hand clothes was the late Mr. Gerard,
murdered at Ratcliffe Highway.
We should get a sample of his hand.
Quite. And can we find out what's happened to that dress? It wasn't with the rest of the evidence.
I'll look into it, sir.
The gate's unlocked for Kildare as he goes to visit Lizzie in her large stone cell. She sits upright and composed.
Why didn't you tell me you've questioned Dan Leno?
I haven't, though I shall have to.
In court they said you had?
Not me, before I joined the case.
So is he a suspect or not?
Do you think he should be?
Please don't play games with me.
I have no desire to. The golem is still at large. Wasting my time could cost lives.
Lizzie looks thoughtful.
Unless you are correct about my husband, if the golem is no more, then none are at risk.
Besides yours, you needn't hang Mrs. Gree.
Please call me Lizzie.
Just assist me in assisting you.
I can't tell you what I don't know.
All I ask is that you tell me what you do.
Where shall I start?
How you came to know John Cree, perhaps.
Jim is very partial to me, though never a word has he said. Right now he's lodging with Mrs. Kelly. Do you know Mrs. Kelly? Don't you know Mrs. Kelly? Good life almighty, don't look so simple. Everybody knows Mrs. Kelly. Am I going too fast for you, love?
You spoof it, I'll write it.
Oh, she's a mean one, Mrs. Kelly. She'll buy half a dozen oysters and eat them in front of a mirror to make them look like a dozen.
What about... I saw her take a coin from her purse the other day, and I swear I saw Queen Victoria blinking at the sight of sunlight.
Are those petticoats iron jet? Good. Then you can come over here and lace me up.
Aveline takes off her gown and stands topless.
Fuck off, Victor.
Come on, dear. You know I can't see from the back row, and I do so love a double act.
Victor, out. Out.
Just for a joke, Dan.
Get that, will you, Lucy? That'll be the reporter for my interview.
John.
You're new?
Lucy, seen you before, haven't I? You work for the Era.
Well, I'm a playwright. But yes, indeed, the Era puts food on my table. For now. John Creed.
He kisses her hand.
Shall we?
Can you help dress, love?
The usual for everyone?
Yes, please, yeah. Don.
What about you, dear?
A baked potato.
You don't fancy a bit of meat tonight, Lizzie? What's the matter, Dan? She must be over 16.
No, I mustn't.
So, Lizzie, what's your act? Do tell.
It's called Little Lizzie the Dog's Body.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, do a manner of gags with an iron and a pile of dirty smalls.
Well, that sounds extraordinary.
It is.
She's damning you, John. She means she's the prompt.
I was only saying earlier, you might make a good gagger. She's got the dial for it, hasn't she, Uncle?
Say that again.
She's got the dial for it, hasn't she, Uncle? Oh, thank you.
I don't know where you put it all, Victor. You must have all our legs.
I can hold as much as the next man, thank you very much.
Pour a quart in a pipe pot, you'll make a mess.
Nonsense. I'm as right as rain. Can't keep a good man down, as they say. But I know where you can put a good man up. Ah!
What in God's name is going on?
Nothing. Lizzie stepped on my foot by mistake. No harm done.
I'm taking Lizzie home. This is no place for an innocent young girl.
Come, gentlemen, no harm done, as the executioner said to the hanged man.
I'll take it.
There's no need, I can walk alone.
No, I'm not here of it.
Please, your food will get cold. I'll be quite safe, our digs are just around the corner.
I'll be back in good time.
Watch yourself, Victor. John Cree's got a temper.
I'm not afraid of it.
Out in the street, in daylight, a man brushes paste over little Victor's name on the Dan Leno bill and covers it with a strip of blank white paper. Lizzie walks through the music hall.
Lizzie. I'm afraid there's awful news. Victor was found at the bottom of the stairs last night.
Lizzie. Are you trying to tell me you suspected John Cree?
I didn't say that. I merely said he was protective.
You said the same of Dan Leno.
I seem to ignite that urge in men.
Dan comforts Lizzie.
He was a terrible little turd. But it was our terrible little turd. That's it. Cheer up. I've suggested that we make tonight's show a special tribute. We'll give him a grand send-off. Won't we?
Did you ever speak of it with John?
No. I never spoke of it to anyone. I preferred to chalk it up to fate. Would you rather owe your happiness to simple good fortune or to an unspeakable act of violence?
Little Victor's death brought you happiness.
Little Victor's death gave me life.
Backstage at the music hall, Lizzie folds up a sailor's shirt, then picks up a skirt and irons it. She stops and looks down thoughtfully at the small folded sailor's shirt. Aveline's practicing her routine on stage.
You what, the people come through the doors and they laugh.
Dan, I told you, you wipe your arse on the paper. You don't
what
read.
More can
Dan,
I do?
Do you think I could pay my respects to little Victor too?
Good God. This is a funny thing. What a funny thing.
Just a little song. A blue one, maybe. Victor would have liked that. A salty sailor act, as if I were a man. Could be a scream.
Go on then, Lizzie. Give it a try.
Isn't that costume a little bit small for you, dear?
But that's the point.
Aveline walks away. Lizzie stands on stage in the sailor shirt and loose white trousers.
A regular farmer's daughter thought she'd like to come to town. But what does she know about railways? She jumped upon the engine, but the stoker shoved her down. Because what does she know about railways? A guard came up and spoke to her as she sat sobbing there. Asked her if she'd a ticket, and she answered with a stare. said he, you can't go up to town until you've paid your fare. But what does she know? Excuse me. About railways. Oh, she arrived at Euston by the midnight train. But when she got to the wicket, there somebody wanted to puncture to get the guard. And porters came round her by the score. And she told them all she'd never had a ticket punch before. Yeah, she told them all she'd never had a ticket punch before.
Lizzie smiles at the applause. Lizzie looks worried. John sits in the audience and applauds with a satisfied smile. Lizzie stands with her head down, then holds up her hands with tatty, fingerless gloves on.
Would you look at these rotten cotton gloves? That salt water will shrink anything.
She puts a leg out.
At least that's the lady who's down at the docks. Tell me.
Lizzie smiles and takes a bow. Afterwards, standing at a bar.
I don't know, I just looked at the gloves and they looked so upset that the line just came to me like that.
The rotten cotton gloves. I mean, it could be your catchphrase. And no need to dip into the blue bag so much.
Oh. They loved it. They loved it. Or they love you. Hello, what?
Uncle.
Careful, Uncle. With Lizzie in that get-up, anyone looking over might think you have an eye for the boys.
Right, let them think what they like. More drinks, please. Little Victor wouldn't have wanted any of us standing up at the end of the night.
I'm tired, I'm afraid. Walk me home, will you, John?
I'll come back.
Dan and Lizzie stand alone at the bar.
Why are you still wearing your costume?
I hoped it might keep the men away.
You prefer the girls, Lizzie. Nothing wrong in that if you do.
Come on, no need to make something from nothing. You dress like a girl.
You're on stage.
Well, if you really care, maybe I like how I felt on stage.
I'll care. I'll care to see you happy. Tonight. Tonight you look happy.
And we still need handwriting samples from Mark Skissing and Lena.
Did you speak with the maid again?
Aveline Ortega? I did, sir. She won't hear a word said against him.
You showed her the journal entries?
She swore the writing wasn't his.
If Cree were our golem, it would certainly make sense of him destroying his papers. And God knows, as a failed playwright, Cree must have grown sick of watching his famous wife earn London's attentions. Do you fancy another?
Trying to get me drunk?
A pint, please.
It was a joke. I didn't mean nothing. I didn't mean to offend. I'm on your side.
Kildare looks at him sharply, then turns away and swigs his beer.
It's not the golem haunting you, is it? It's her.
She's going to hang, Flood. We have to rule out the other suspects.
Well, I may have found an eyewitness in Limehouse, sir.
Wheelock!
You're not in any trouble. I'm taking you to someone who can translate. Understand?
In an alley.
This is Sister Mary.
To me, dear, to every walker, can the fun to fire in May, a holy breathlock.
The child says she's not for sale. Her mam's got a fella taking her on her next birthday.
No, please. Tell her my colleague showed her some photographs, suspects in a crime. She seemed to recognise one of them. We need to know where and when she saw him.
Sir. This is where Solomon Vile lived. The scholar, the third victim. Which house number did he...
Number four.
The girl leads them to number four and points at the door. Kildare shows her a picture.
This man?
The nun.
Families starve in the streets. Women are used up and thrown away, and you... You persecute one who fights for the people. You're not fit to clean the boots of a man like Karl Marx.
Marx bangs his desk and stands up. Flood and Kildare sit and watch him.
Stop.
London declares that the Jew was murdered by a Jewish monster, and so absolves itself of all responsibility. Make no mistake, gentlemen. It is not Solomon Vile who is mutilated and murdered here. It is the Jew.
None of the Golem's other victims were Hebrews, sir.
But do you not see? This murderer strikes at the very symbols of the city. The Jew, the whore. They are the sacrificial tributes in this labyrinth of London. And so, of course, must be ritually butchered.
Kildare pushes a blank sheet of paper towards Marks, along with a pen in a pot of ink.
What is it that you wish me to write?
The Morning Herald had declined to review my debut.
All that work for nothing. I resolved that this time I put on a show that everyone would notice. A fine opening act of the crowd-pleasing sort.
Marx approaches a girl in the street. Then he cuts her throat. He cuts her twice more, then unrolls a belt of tools and takes out a saw. He kneels over the woman's body and saws at it, then holds up her severed head.
And I went on to create a spectacle that no beholder would ever forget.
Marx leaves the head in the window.
It was all too easy to kill a whore. Tonight I would return to kill the Jew. This is absurd. You didn't do this.
Of course I didn't.
In court.
Would you agree with the defendant that in the weeks before his death, Mr. Cree had seemed morbid?
No, sir. He was in good spirits.
And how would you describe relations between Mr. Cree and his wife?
Not especially good, sir. They saw very little of each other.
And yet Mrs. Cree insisted on preparing him a nightly draught.
That is correct, sir.
And did you hear Mr. Cree express suspicions that she might have tainted this draught with something?
Not quite. Though just before his death, I overheard them in dispute. I heard Mr. Cree say, "You devil, you have done this."
Lizzie looks around fearfully, in her cell with Kildare.
She may as well have placed the noose around my neck herself.
You must make it plain to the jury that there was bad blood between the two of you. Romantic jealousy.
I never stood between them. I'm sure my feelings on intimacy are plain to you by now. John was free to court Aveline if he wanted to.
But he had his heart set on you.
I did nothing to encourage it. My stage career had taken off. I rarely saw him. And then, out of the blue, he invited me for supper.
Your new show's tremendous.
We feel awful intruding. We simply adore you.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll treasure this. Thank you very much.
I can't believe it.
What a surprise. It's all easy.
As I was saying, I have reached the end of the first act of Misery Junction. But I can't quite decide what to do with my heroine next. And, I thought you might advise me.
I'm flattered.
The heroine's name is Catherine Dove. When I began, I had her in the workhouses, but now I have her sewing sailcloth on the docks.
Mother died when I was young. Her kidneys. It was so fast.
Orphaned and alone at 14.
Is Catherine Dove an orphan?
Well, she could be. But you've still not told me what to do with her by the end of the first act.
What's your dilemma?
At the moment, she's very close to starvation and ruin, and I'm wondering if I should rescue her.
Yes. Have her become successful. Loved by her audiences.
But she's very much alone, living in theatrical digs, hand to mouth. It's a life of degradation.
Come on. People love to see degradation upon the stage. It's what they pay for.
Yeah, but they expect to see a happy ending. And Catherine deserves a protector.
She does. A manager, perhaps. Someone kindly, like Uncle.
No, an elderly character the audience would know he wouldn't live to see her into old age.
A friend, then. comic, maybe.
I would like to give her a suitor. Someone who cares fiercely for her well-being. A white knight. What do you think?
I think Catherine Dove can look out for herself.
Lizzie goes home.
In the bowl. Oh. Yes, there we go. Get it out. Gin.
Lizzie smiles as Dan looks after Aveline. Oh,
God, I think I put my back out, Canner, upstairs. So you decided to dress as a woman this evening?
Can't wear a costume out to supper, can I?
Wouldn't be the first time.
Dan sits by Aveline as Lizzie changes clothes nearby.
Be careful of that one, Lizzie. Don't lead him up the garden path unless you're prepared to be dragged indoors.
He offered me to lead in Misery Junction.
He'll expect something in return.
Dan stands up and crosses the candlelit room to sit beside Lizzie.
You don't need him, Lizzie. Did all this on your own.
Could do more. Could be a real actress. Show the world what people like us are really capable of. I just need a chance.
Here we sit, the two most famous faces on the stage, and you suggest the world conspires to oppress us.
Remember that book you lent me? Pope. In the Temple of Fame, some people's names are carved in stone and others in ice. We're clowns, Dan. We'll be forgotten.
If you think a man like John Cree is going to change that, I don't have the breath to argue. And you know she's got a soft spot for him. And whatever her faults, she's family. And we look out for each other, don't we?
Later, Dan peers out through the curtain at the audience.
The big finale is the hanging. With a life-size gallows, I'll wear this harness concealed and then drop right through the trap just there. Looks just like a real hanging.
Lizzie, are you sure it's safe, this contraption? You're not wearing a real noose, are you?
Oh, the noose is real, but the fall is broken by the harness.
Where's Lizzie?
Up above, giving John Cree an interview for the era.
Is that what they call it?
I'll go and tell her to hurry up.
The play's a shocker, but a spoof shocker, the way only our marvellous company can do it. Dan wrote it. It's based on the Ratcliffe Highway murders of 1811.
John Williams.
Pardon?
The killer's name was John Williams.
Oh, quite. But much of it is fiction. It's all great fun and terribly gory. Oh, you must put that in for your readers. Dan says everybody thrills to gore these days.
Let's have you finished, John. She's not even ready and she's on the stage in 10 minutes.
We can't have the star late for the first performance.
Dan's still the star. Always will be.
Thought I felt my ears burning. Did anyone check the safety?
Of course. Wouldn't let anything happen to our Lizzie, would we?
How's the crowd?
Excellent. Great number of Jews. I believe it's one of their holidays.
You should speak to them in Yiddish. They will love it. Wish them Misa Mashina.
They smile and go separate ways. In the music hall...
Welcome, great hearts, to an evening of horror.
Lizzie's top hat falls off.
Our play is about to begin. But first, ladies and gentlemen, and those not unconnected with a certain historical chosen race, may I wish you all, from the bottom of my heart, Misa Mashina.
Get this Mashina!
The crowd turns angry, and Uncle quickly draws the curtains.
What did you say that for? What happened? Lizzie wished the Jews a sudden death.
Lizzie walks up to Aveline.
It was only a lark, Lizzie.
Lizzie runs up the stairs and into John's arms.
I came back at once to see if you were all right.
Aveline watches from the ground floor as they embrace. John holds Lizzie for a long time. Aveline watches them anxiously. Lizzie breaks off the embrace, and they look at each other for a moment, then kiss. In the cell.
And after that, you began courting.
After a fashion. I could never love John enough to give him what he really wanted.
But you grew to love him.
I wanted to be in his play. He wanted the gratification of plucking a poor and needy girl from misery and saving her. We used one another equally. Perhaps that's the best that can be said of any coupling.
That's a very dim view.
If you seek a dim view, be sure to ask a comedian.
Flood's working at his desk when Kildare walks into the office. He closes the door and takes off his coat.
Alice Stanton's dress finally showed up, improperly archived, like everything else here.
Kildare unwraps the package.
Been at the jail again?
He ignores Flood.
Anything more on Cree?
Only that he was a manipulative ass who fancied himself as a white knight.
I meant as relating to our case. The golem. Remember him?
Cree knew of the murder of John Williams, yet apparently so did Dan Leno. In fact, Leno wrote a whole play about the fellow.
Golem suspect who is alive. That would be bad news.
For his next victim, certainly.
And for you, or do you no longer care what becomes of your career?
I have a job to do, and I'm doing it.
And which job would that be?
Watch your tongue, Flood. Do I need to remind you of your position?
That may be helpful. Because there are times when I'm confused as to whether we're here to find the golem or to save Elizabeth Cree.
Perhaps we'll do both. Who knows?
He looks at the coat.
Dear God, how many pockets did Leno need?
He tosses things into the crowd. Sweeties, flowers, undergarments.
Sounds hilarious. Didn't Roberts empty the contents?
The coroner's office did it. Why, did they miss something?
He takes out a folded piece of white paper and opens it up. Kildare reads it, then shows it to Flood.
Eight Gower Place. Why do I know that?
Perhaps because we're due a visit. It's George Gissing's address.
His wife gave him an alibi for the night of the Radcliffe Highway murders, but she seemed fond of a drink.
They knock at number 8 in the dark, unruly street. A drunk woman opens the door.
We need to talk to Mr. Gissing, madam.
George isn't here. He just left.
Do you know where he was going?
Limehouse, perhaps.
Flood and Kildare exchange a look. She closes the door and they walk away together, turning off the main street. Flood and Kildare walk down a dark, narrow street and spot three figures up ahead. Kildare stops Flood from advancing.
Not yet. I'm interested to see where he goes. What business a scholar has in the streets of Limehouse.
They watch as Gissing goes one way and the two men go another. Flood and Kildare set off after Gissing. He walks down a narrow passage through poor living quarters. Flood and Kildare hold back and watch as Gissing walks on purposefully through the narrow passages. He knocks on a red door and it opens. Gissing goes inside. Flood and Kildare approach the door.
Madam, we're from Scotland Yard.
Register pharmacy. You go away. Check my record.
Our business is with Mr. Gissing, the man who just entered, not you.
The opium den.
Good customer. He'd keep his work here.
Lee Pei Jin Wen Hao. Always working, writing.
Mr. Gissing, I'm Detective Inspector Kildare of Scotland Yard. Perhaps you could explain how this came to be in the possession of a murdered woman.
I'm afraid you'll find my address in the pockets of a great many women in this area, sir. My wife, Nell, is in the habit of going missing. I give my address so that they may contact me if they see her. Let us just say my wife used to ply the same trade. You don't seem in the least bit surprised.
By what?
That a gentleman like me, a scholar, should have wed a fallen woman.
Why would anyone be surprised? The world is full of men like you, Mr. Gissing.
I beg your pardon?
Men who feign generosity when what they really seek is congratulation. Men who play God by saving lives. Is it really so different, I wonder, from playing God by taking them?
I am not a murderer, sir.
Then perhaps you will write the words that I dictate And let's get this thing done. September 10th, 1880. My public debut had garnered rave reviews.
I could scarcely wait to begin work on my next creation, but there was time to pass before dark, so I paid a visit to the Radcliffe Highway shop.
Gissing stands inside and watches a woman fill out the ledger.
I bought some cufflinks from the owner's wife. I could tell that when the time came, she would make a fine player in my magnum opus.
Gissing looks at a bill poster for Bluebeard with Mr. Dan Leno, then walks on down the street. He turns into a narrow passage and stops to look up at an old, worn door with a round knocker. Gissing goes inside and up a dark staircase, moving confidently through the shadows and taking off his hat. An elderly Jewish man working in an office looks round in surprise.
You're not the Jew from the library. Ah, well, no matter.
Who are you? What do you want?
I have come to discourse with you about death and everlasting life. Herein lies the secret.
Gissing hits him and knocks him down, then opens a cutthroat razor and starts to cut him up.
It was here that I read of the mythical golem, a homunculus of clay given life by man. How could any Londoner fail to delight in this piece of theatre? I could even see myself appearing before the next unfortunate with mallet in hand, exclaiming, "Here we are again."
In the opium den.
May I go now?
What? Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
Why would you be thinking of me still? My hand doesn't match at all. You know I'm innocent.
I know. I was reading what you wrote. You were in my mind. I'm sorry. Something I missed.
Oh, I see. What is it?
A line from the journal. I bought some cufflinks from the owner's wife. On September the 10th, the golem made a purchase from the Radcliffe Highway shop.
Kildare and Flood visit the shop. Kildare takes the ledger out from under the counter and looks through it. He points at the name Cree in a list, then at the name Leno a little further down. Kildare reads De Quincey's book as Leno.
A new production of Bluebeard opens this weekend, and all of London longs to see the great Dan Leno performing it. But I know they yearn for more potent excitements. This is pantomime in its purest form. I can even see myself appearing before the next unfortunate with a mallet in my hand, exclaiming, "Here we are again."
A bloodied woman is hoisted up against a dark, wet wall with golem written on it.
What strange coincidence and delight to discover on the streets of Limehouse a whore.
But in a costume I remembered well.
She was a player, waiting for a role. Of course, I obliged her. The public yearned for the next instalment.
And one should never keep an audience waiting.
In the street.
We need to forget about Cree and concentrate on Leno. The golem even imagined himself saying, "Here we are again."
I know, but apparently everyone knows Leno's catchphrase.
There's Alice Stanton's dress and the fact he knew Mr. Gerard.
We're all part of London's tapestry. Sometimes threads get crossed. Good Lord.
They look at a poster for the Limehouse Demon.
We should buy tickets. I'd be intrigued to see how it ends.
Well, I could recommend many better shows.
I was making a joke, Flood.
As was I, obviously. We'd wish to see something in such poor taste.
Apparently London's appetite for horror knows no bounds. Our golem was quite correct about that.
Oh, Bluey, please! Have mercy! It's been days since I've eaten!
Dan Leno performs as a woman, sitting on the stage. A man walks up behind her and frees her hands.
Oh, you are a kind Rabbit said you're not good to me. I thought I might expire from starvation.
The man hits her twice on the head from behind and she collapses. He steps over her twice, treading on her stomach.
What on earth are you doing, dear?
I'm taking my medical treatment.
Your treatment?
The doctor told me to take a daily walk on an empty stomach.
Flood and Kildare wait for Dan backstage.
Brought the receipt as you requested in your telegram. As you will see, I did not buy cufflinks. A lady's hat. I often shop for stage wear at Jared's little shop. God rest him. I knew him well. Oh, now, you mentioned needing a sample of my hand. Well, I brought a pile of my old papers. Please, take as many as you see fit.
I'm afraid I'll need you to produce a sample in my presence, Mr. Leno.
Then you will permit me to pay you a visit at Scotland Yard tomorrow afternoon. Only I have supper arrangements. And I'm still to be rid of all this. If you'll excuse me.
Perhaps we could continue to talk while you're... I've some questions I'd like to ask you about John Cree.
Then I shall try to answer them, though one should never speak ill of the dead.
You didn't care for the man?
I was friendly with his wife. He made her unhappy. You may extrapolate the rest.
When did you last see him?
The first night of his play, Misery Junction, which also happened to be the closing night.
I know. Did you see him afterwards?
Of course. This is my theatre. I took over managing it last year when Uncle joined the great pantomime in the sky.
The performance was here?
For Lizzie's sake. Whatever became of our friendship, we'll always be family. Is John Cree a suspect?
I'm not at liberty to say.
A posthumous suspect? What will you do, dig him up for the trial?
Do you know why Lizzie might be reluctant to voice any suspicions?
You think she's protecting him? Now that's a novel slant. Most people believe she poisoned him.
Do you?
By the way, that man was the author of his own demise. He practically destroyed her, insisting she give up the stage. I mean, he may as well have ended her life.
Do you think he was capable of ending her life? Literally, I mean.
Who knows what any man is capable of? We all wear pantomime masks, do we not? I'm sorry, I really must dress now.
First, tell me about little Victor.
If the injustices of the past interest you, you'd do better to look into the demise of Tommy Farr.
Uncle.
Uncle.
Lizzie's reading a newspaper in her cell, sitting up against a pillar, when Kildare walks in.
They said the jury expects to reach a verdict this afternoon.
I know. Lizzie.
It would seem the press have reached theirs already.
Lizzie, I spoke with Dan. He urged me to look into Uncle's death.
If you wanted to know about Uncle, you should simply have asked.
Come into the parlour.
As the spider said to the fly.
Isn't that how it goes? The rhyme?
Maybe, Lizzie. Maybe. Cucumber sandwich?
No, thanks.
Oh, I forgot. You're not entirely partial to cucumber, are you?
What's this about, Uncle? Why'd you invite me?
Now I want to show you something. Close your eyes. Good girl. Shh.
Uncle takes Lizzie's hand and leads her across the room. He pulls a curtain back and opens a door, then leads her into the middle of a small adjoining room. She opens her eyes and looks around in surprise. The wall behind her is covered with black and white photographs of naked women.
Just my fun, Lizzie. I like a good beating every now and again. Doesn't everyone?
I know her. That's the girl who assisted the great Bellini. She used to be sawn in half.
I saw her, Dax. What a performer. But it's a shame she had to leave the company.
Why have you shown me this?
Don't play innocent with me.
I'm not playing, I'm real.
Well, I'd be grateful if you could oblige me, Lizzie. With a pose, a tableau, perhaps a little beating.
I would rather be destroyed first. I'm prepared to forget that this visit ever took place.
Well, as I said, it is a pity she had to go. She grew tired of performing.
You would never be rid of me. Dan would never allow it.
Well, I find, as keeper of the Bunce, that I can do as I please. Now, you keep my secret, and I'll keep yours.
I have no secrets.
Well, you shall in a moment.
Uncle hands her a thin, curved whipping cane and takes off his robe, revealing a body decorated with tattoos. At the docks...
He said I'm to return to him next Sunday. And every Sunday hereafter.
To do the same again.
There's photographs. John, I had to speak of it to
someone. This is monstrous, Lizzie!
You can't tell us all.
My sharp would have stopped to this. But first... I wish to do this. He's robbed you of your honour. Let me restore it to you.
He proposes.
Uncle died 3 days after John confronted him.
Uncle's not young. He had a weak heart and a fondness for drink.
That's not what Dan Leno thinks. He thinks that John blackmailed Uncle into changing his will and then killed him.
£500 in the camera. It would seem I gave an excellent beating.
You don't want to be saved, do you? Not by me. Not by any man.
I don't deserve to be saved.
John carries Lizzie into a bedroom and puts her down on the bed in her wedding dress. He starts undressing and kneels behind her, kissing her neck and undoing her dress.
John, I can't.
What do you mean? We're husband and wife now, Lizzie.
I know.
3 years I've waited. 3 years of courtship and endless bloody engagement.
Well, it was hardly my fault that Panto season extended to Easter. Would you have had me spend our wedding night playing Aladdin?
It seems now that option would have been scarcely different.
Please, John, just try to understand.
You understand?
John, please, I don't like it.
No, I don't ask for gratitude for all I've done for you. All I ask is that you fulfill your duties as a wife.
John lies on top of Lizzie and thrusts against her, while she grimaces and looks painfully up at the ceiling.
What are you doing here?
Lizzie walks backstage at the music hall.
I'll have a new contract drawn up tomorrow, John. But don't you worry.
Lizzie!
Don't you worry.
Fine.
Lizzie!
She smiles at Dan.
Well, well. If it isn't Mrs. John Cree, 3 months of married life and you're missing the roar of the grease paints already.
Oh, nonsense. I've been too busy to miss anything.
Oh, what tosh. Little Lizzie without an audience. You mustn't let that rotten man order you about, so...
John is perfectly happy for me to perform. I'm still going to play the lead in Misery Junction.
Oh, come off it, Lizzie. That man's so petrified of failure, he'll never bring himself to finish it.
Lee's writing every day at the library. It's almost complete.
Now, I'm telling you as a friend, Lizzie, forget Misery Junction, forget John. If you want your name etched in stone, you're going to have to take up the chisel yourself. So, to what do we owe the pleasure?
Actually, I'm here to see Eveline. I have a proposition for you, dear. I'm in need of a lady's maid.
Me?
Hmm?
You must be playing.
I can offer you twice the weekly wage you're earning here. All I require is some help bearing the load of my wifely duties.
Dear God, Lizzie.
Eveline smiles. In a large, cluttered, gloomy living room, Lizzie kneels on the floor near the fire and pours drinks on a small occasional table. Aveline walks in and stands behind her, watching.
Do you know how John's play is coming along?
Very nicely, he tells me. You know, there's no need for you to prepare his nightly cordial, Lizzie. I can do it.
I make one for myself. It's no more effort to prepare two.
I'd be happy to make both. I could bring yours to your quarters before I take John's to his.
Lizzie stops for a moment. Then she stirs the drinks and stands up with the two glasses. She goes to Aveline and gives her one of them, then walks off with the other. Aveline watches her go. Lizzie sits up in a single bed, listening. Lizzie looks across the room and gets up. She walks through the room to a partially open door and looks in on John and Aveline, who sits on him as they make love. Aveline looks straight at Lizzie. Lizzie watches for a moment, then she lies on a sofa downstairs, gazing at her hands. Lizzie looks up at the ceiling and sits up. She looks around the room, then over at some framed posters on the wall, advertising her performances. Lizzie spots John's bag and opens it. She takes out a large leather folder and looks inside. Lizzie pulls out a bundle of papers and flicks through them. She walks up to John in the British Library, where he sits with Marx and Gissing, and taps him hard on the arm.
What on earth are you doing here?
I should ask you the same thing, because I know what it is that you are not doing, and that is writing. Why tell me Misery Junction was not finished when it was hardly even begun?
What? It's nearly complete. I have just put it aside for now.
Put it aside? I support you financially. I allow that your every need is met.
Oh, don't pillory me about my damn play if what really irks you is Aveline.
Why would that irk me?
Go home, Lizzie. And let me finish my research.
Your research? Into what?
My play. My new play.
But what of Misery Junction?
I grew tired of Catherine Dove.
Is there a role in it for me?
No, Lizzie. There is not. You're a lady now. And the stage is no place for a lady.
Lizzie stares at John as he turns and walks away. In the cell.
You staged it without permission, and it was poorly received.
Misery Junction leaves audience in misery indeed. Isn't it funny how the savage reviews are the ones you can recall word for word?
People throw food as Lizzie whips a man on stage.
More! More!
Uncle, please! You have stolen my honor! I am an innocent!
You wish to be a man? Just pretend that I'm a woman.
It's Lizzie, they're mocking you. It's not your play.
You lie! This was not for me, this was for you! You wish to prove yourself as an actress, you selfish whore, and you failed even at that.
You are the failure!
Jesus!
See? Where's the white knight now, John? You are just as all men.
One more word from your mouth and I will snap your wretched neck!
John, go home!
My play was unfinished, and you destroyed it! Destroyed me and my reputation!
You don't have a reputation, who do you believe yourself to be? You are nobody, John. Nobody, and you never will be!
Get out of here, John.
Out!
Look at you both. You're clowns. Worthless clowns. You're the ones who'll be forgotten. Not me. Not me.
John pushes Aveline away and stops a passing cab.
John?
Drive on!
John! 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 John!
That opening night, September the 5th, it drove him over the edge, but not to suicide. It drove him to prove to the world that he was an artist. That night, the golem made his first kill, and you think it's your fault.
You're putting words in my mouth.
Why this dance, Lizzie? Why won't you admit that you came to know or at least suspect what he'd become?
If this is a dance, it is you who is leading.
Let me read you the last entry. Ratcliffe Highway was a tour de force,
and as an actor may take home a program as a souvenir, so I returned with a blood-soaked shawl belonging to the clothes seller's wife. The next night, fearful of discovery, I ventured to destroy it, and therein lay my mistake.
Lizzie finds him in the living room.
John, you're home. I didn't hear you come in.
He turns to look at her, and she notices the remains of the blood-soaked shawl on the hearth.
There were no questions asked. No recriminations.
John turns an oil lamp on as he sits up in bed.
I believe a homemade punishment may be planned for me instead.
He looks round at Lizzie as she passes his open door and stops to look in at him, holding a drink. Lizzie walks on, and Aveline comes into the room with John's glass. Aveline drops her robe and walks naked to the bed. She climbs in with John.
I no longer feel safe under my own roof. I cannot go on like this.
In the cell.
You poisoned him, didn't you? Lizzie, listen to me. We have a few minutes. You can still change your plea. Confess. You did it because you knew what he was. You did it because you were in fear for your life. I promise you'll have the sympathy of the jury.
I don't want their sympathy.
Why do you not deserve redemption? Because you killed him or because you believe you created a monster?
What I deserve is to live freely and in death be remembered for my accomplishments, not as the wife who poisoned her husband, my name forever tethered to his.
Mrs. Cree.
While that chance remains, I have no choice but to cling to it.
Lizzie turns and walks out of the cell. In court.
Have the jury reached a verdict?
Yes, my lord.
How did the jury find the defendant?
Guilty.
Order! Order! Elizabeth Cree, you will be returned to prison and taken from there to a place of execution where at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning you will be hanged by the neck until you are dead. May the Lord have mercy on your soul.
Inspector Kildare, Scotland Yard, I need a moment with her, please.
Kildare gets into the carriage.
You don't deserve this.
Stan, I hang tomorrow at 10.
No, I won't let it happen. John Cree was a murderer. I mean to prove it and appeal for your pardon. The world needs to know the truth.
A tear rolls down Lizzie's cheek.
I'd like for you to unmask the golem. This is your moment, your chance. I'd like for you to have that.
I'm sorry, sir. We need to leave.
We don't have much time.
The manuscript of Misery Junction is handwritten. Dan may still have it.
I shall stop this. I promise you.
The police officer shuts the door. Lizzie watches Kildare out of the back window as she's driven away. Nighttime at the theatre. Flood and Kildare stand on a walkway above the stage watching a performance. Dan's character holds up a severed head.
Here we are again! Lizzie paid for the hire of the theatre. Now, I advised her against it, but she was adamant.
And it was not a success.
That's putting it mildly.
So put it any way that you will.
Barely any tickets sold, but Lizzie insisted on a full house, so she took to the streets and gave them away to the poor.
Ah. Dan pulls a case out from under the bed and looks through it.
Aha! Here it is. Misery Junction.
Kildare opens it and closes it.
It's typeset.
Oh, I don't have the original manuscript, I'm afraid. The usual practice is to have it archived, unless the author asks for it back, which he didn't.
Archived? Where?
The librarian agreed to open up early, sir. He should be here any moment.
Well, I pray he is. They hang her at 10.
They stop at the door of the British Library, and Kildare checks the time. 9 o'clock. Lizzie stands in front of a mirror and closes her eyes. She opens them again, and in the mirror's reflection, she's backstage.
Lizzie.
I'm ready.
In the cell, a police officer stands behind her as she lets her hair down and turns to face him. The librarian leads Flood and Kildare to a bookcase.
But this is most odd. Should be here.
Could someone have withdrawn it?
Not unless they did so just now.
Quickly, the door.
Sir!
They go after a woman and grab her. Aveline.
Unhand me. I've done nothing
wrong. Then perhaps you could tell us why the hurry to obtain this.
I plan to rewrite it, sir. To mount a production. A topical shocker about Lizzie Cree. Now she's to be hanged. It'll be a smash.
Really? So you're a writer now, are you, Miss Ortega?
No, sir. But it won't require much work. It was the story of her life, after all. My idea is to begin the play at the gallows, then retrace each step that led her to them.
But I cannot help but think that the addition of a murderous husband might be popular.
I told you all I know, sir. John is innocent.
Kildare nods and puts the manuscript down on a polished wooden surface, opening it on the handwritten text of the first page. Flood takes hold of Aveline's arm and watches as Kildare opens the book. The writing in both books is identical, particularly the squiggles on the M of Golem and Misery, a flashback to the murders, now all with John and Cree at the scene. Then John hitting Lizzie after Misery Junction's debut.
Jesus!
You're the ones who'll be forgotten! Not me.
Lizzie's led down a tunnel to the gallows in a courtyard.
Is it time? There's no one here.
I hardly ever admit the public these days, Mrs. Cree. Only for the most hated.
Please, no. You must help me. Please tell them to wait. Inspector Kildare is coming.
I'm sorry.
Can't you go any faster?
Prison's just around the corner.
I know.
No, we must wait for him. Please. This is wrong. He will prove it. I beg you, just a little longer.
I'm sorry.
The officer guides her up the steps.
Come on.
Kildare's pocket watch shows 2:50. Lizzie reaches the top of the steps where the noose awaits. Kildare's carriage is held up by workers in the narrow street. Lizzie's hands are tied by the hangman. Kildare gets out of the carriage and runs through the crowded street. The hangman offers Lizzie a hood, but she shakes her head. Kildare reaches the main prison gates.
Steady, sir. Who are you here for?
Elizabeth Cree. Say I'm not too late.
Nick, just taking her down. Quick as you can.
Send for the magistrate.
The hangman lifts the noose.
Stop! Stop!
Lizzie runs down the steps to Kildare and they embrace. Sitting in the cell.
Don't thank me yet. All they'd give me was an hour's grace to speak to the magistrate. I've still to convince him to reduce your sentence.
Don't be glum. You have the golem. The world will know the real story. And it's you. You who will know every chapter. Who will tell it.
You have my gratitude always.
And you mine.
Kildare opens the book John wrote in, and Lizzie takes it.
Lizzie, don't.
She stands up and reads the notes.
Could any believe John Cree capable of such deeds?
I guarantee it. Have no doubt.
Then let us bring this to an end.
She takes the paper from Kildare and sits down.
Here's what you'll write. I am Elizabeth Cree, and in September of this year, I came to know that my husband was the Limehouse Golem. All you need to do is tell the truth.
I have never told you anything but the truth, Kildare.
Lizzie starts to write. Kildare stands behind her and watches. His expression turns to alarm as he watches her write in a style identical to that in De Quincey's book and John's manuscript, I Am the Golem. In flashbacks, Kildare remembers the name Cree in the shop ledger, but it's Lizzie buying the cufflinks. Lizzie stabs a woman in the stomach, ties a woman's wrists, and hoists her up against the wall. In the cell, she hands Kildare her statement.
You shall have your moment, and I mine.
Lizzie commits the murders.
In the Temple of Fame, our names be written side by side in stone for all time.
She cuts the Jewish man's penis off and leaves it lying on an open book. A flashback to the British Museum.
Who was here on September the 24th?
There were four men in the reading room that day.
But there's no earthly way of knowing what anyone read or when they read it.
Lizzie writes at a table.
John, you're home. I didn't hear you come in.
She looks down at the bloody shawl.
There were no questions asked. No recriminations. I believe a homemade punishment may be planned for me instead. I no longer feel safe under my own roof. I cannot go on like this.
Lizzie poisons his drink.
Still, we had agreement to keep each other's secrets. And you didn't keep mine, did you? I wonder what I should do with yours.
So you should take it to the grave.
Lizzie smothers Uncle and kicks Victor down the stairs after he gropes her in the restaurant. She force-feeds her mother drink from a bottle, then staggers down an alley. At the prison, the officer opens the gate and Kildare hurries out. Kildare stands by the fire in his office and holds up Lizzie's statement, "I am the golem." Photos from the crime scene. Then Lizzie walking into the shop.
Mr. Gerard, sir?
She looks around, then steps into the shadows as the maid approaches. Lizzie grabs her from behind and cuts her throat. Mr. Gerard.
Annie?
Lizzie steps back into the shadows as he goes downstairs and walks through the house, looking around nervously. She hits him from behind. She kneels.
Oh, I know, I know. If you would think a woman capable of such artistry.
Lizzie calmly cuts his throat with a razor. Covered in blood, Lizzie goes upstairs and into the bedroom, where Mrs. Gerard sits on the bed with two young children. They all look round at her.
Here we are again!
Kildare stands in his office and stares at Lizzie's statement. He drops it down into the fire and lets it burn. The single sheet of paper flares up and quickly burns away. Kildare sits down at his desk looking weary. Flood marches up to the door, but stops and looks in before opening it. He stares at Kildare as he closes the door. Kildare looks at the desk, but doesn't turn round.
You were too late. This is probably the last thing you want at present, but they're waiting for you downstairs. You're about to be the toast of London, John.
Kildare winces painfully. Flood kneels down beside him.
I know how much you cared for her. I know how grateful she would be that the world will know what our bastard husband really was. Not just as a murderer, but as a man who sought to deny her all she wanted to be. It's you who saved her honour. Her memory. She would have wanted you to have this.
Kildare pulls his hand away from Flood's grasp. Surprised, Flood stands up again and leaves. He looks back at Kildare before walking away. At the gallows.
No, we must wait for him, please. This is wrong, he will prove it. I beg you just a little longer.
I don't believe Inspector Kildare will be coming back.
Kildare meets the press.
I am not a poisoner.
I believe you.
I am so much more.
We shall be issuing a full report on John Cree in an hour, gentlemen.
Well, it seems the show must go on.
Londoners can sleep easy in their beds again. The golem is no more.
Inspector, Inspector, any comments on your promotion, sir?
Kildare checks his watch.
Any last words?
Here we are again.
Kildare looks up. The Palace Music Hall puts on a production of Misery Junction, based on the tragic life of Elizabeth Cree, slayer of the notorious golem. Kildare stands and reads the poster, then he turns and walks away amongst the waiting audience. He goes into the crowded music hall and takes a seat at one of the tables near the front of the stage. Kildare looks around uneasily as people sit down around him. He spots Flood at a nearby table talking with a young man. When Flood looks at him, Kildare quickly looks away. In the dressing room, Aveline stares at her reflection in the mirror before putting on a woman's wig that someone hands her. The house lights dim and the curtains open. Kildare joins in the applause as Dan steps out of the shadows, wearing a suit and hat. He holds his hands up in the light.
Let us begin, my friends, at the end.
He retreats back into the shadows. The audience watch keenly as Aveline steps out as Lizzie in a long white dress. Backstage, Dan comes off and is helped to quickly change. On stage, Aveline stands in front of the gallows looking out at the audience. Then, she slowly walks up the steps to the platform. Kildare sits amongst the gripped, emotional audience as the hangman puts the noose over Aveline's head. Dan quickly looks down at Aveline, then sits at a dressing table for makeup.
Not the green, love, the red. Mother doesn't get sick until scene four.
He takes a drink. Aveline stands on the gallows looking out at the audience.
Did anyone check the safety?
The trap door opens. Aveline drops and the rope breaks her neck. The safety rope is unhooked. The curtains are quickly drawn. They lie Aveline on the floor as Dan and others run up.
Is she breathing?
Dan shakes his head.
We have to get back out there. You're Lizzie's mother now.
He gives his wig and necklace to the woman next to him and kneels beside Aveline. Dan takes the wig off her head and puts it on his own.
I'll be Lizzie.
The curtains open, and Dan steps out as Lizzie. He holds his arms out as the crowd cheers. Only Kildare sits still, and Dan gives him a subtle nod. Dan looks back at the audience and smiles. Then, it's Lizzie standing on stage, taking in the applause and smiling with her arms held out wide. The audience gives a rapturous standing ovation, and Lizzie grins happily.